Welcome to the Airport Experience News Podcast. Now that you've found this episode, and if you have not done so already, please make sure to subscribe or like. This way, you'll be certain to get our latest content once it gets posted. I've kind of said it before, it's just really convenient because you don't have to go scrolling around looking for the latest episode or wondering when an episode's been posted, all of which can be kind of a pain and a hassle. And with that, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher. If you're jumping in now, please know that there are 7 other episodes that we recorded at the Airport Experience Conference. And as with all of them, they were recorded in the studio that was sponsored by our friends at Taste in the Fly. Anyway, make sure to check out all the previous episodes. They're here on the Airport Experience News podcast feed. So this is episode 26. I speak with Paul Brown, the Assistant General Manager for Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. Paul did me a favor here. He did double duty. We recorded this on the final day of the show, and we were a bit rushed because Paul was moderating a panel immediately after this podcast. And while we were recording, I basically kept looking at my watch just so I could make sure that he wasn't going to be late. So definitely want to have Paul back on again because he just has a wealth of knowledge from the many years he's been in this industry. So Paul shares his history and views on the industry, which again makes him a great resource. He also talks about the benefits of working at the busiest airport in the world, which we can pretty much debate. And he gives his perspective on the companies in the ACB program and where they're headed. So here is my conversation with Paul Brown. This is the Airport Experience News Podcast. We're recording here live in the Airport Experience Conference in Las Vegas. We are actually in the Airport Experience News Podcast studio sponsored by Taste in the Fly. I am so happy to be joined by my friend Paul Brown, the Assistant General Manager for Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. Paul, thanks for sitting down.
Thanks for having me, Ramon. It's great to be here.
Cool. So early in the morning, I know it's been great. There's a lot of activity in the hall. Thank you for taking the time because I know you're a busy guy.
Yes, sir.
You're always well sought out. But I wanted to grab you and sit down with you and just talk about the industry as a whole and maybe get into a little bit about you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think that's probably the best place to start. Let's start with you. You know, in general, you know, what are some of the benefits of being a part of the busiest airport in the world? Actually, maybe now, maybe the second. Have you slipped in the race between you and O'Hare? Let's say one of the busiest airports in the world. What are the benefits?
Well, I will say this about that is I'm lucky enough to have worked at O'Hare when it was the busiest airport.
Okay.
For sure. And then the way we measure the way we claim our status as world's busiest airport is obviously in the passenger. Yeah. Metrics and not necessarily operations. And O'Hare, it's a fine airport. obviously, right now, nobody has more operations than they have.
Sure.
But we're a close second, right behind them in that department. But it's really in the movement of passengers where we stand unchallenged. 107.4 million passengers last year, and that number continues to grow.
Cool. So would you say, like, being such a large airport, normally it seems like when you're an employee of that airport, you have more resources, thus you're always very narrow focused on a project. Whereas if it's a smaller airport, then you have to wear multiple hats, you got to have a diverse skill set. So, you know, what are some of the benefits in terms of, for you, during your time in Atlanta?
Atlanta is a unique environment. I don't know how you could duplicate it right now. Just being such a tremendous transportation hub, it's one of the best things about Atlanta is that you can get to almost anywhere in the country in 2 hours. You know, excluding the West Coast, you can get to most of the major population centers very easily. And the other cool thing about Atlanta is we have, I think, one of the best airlines in the world in Delta Airlines being the major carrier for our hub. And we're also buffeted by a few other very, very good airlines that are fast growing and up and coming, such as Spirit and Frontier. So we're very, very lucky to have what we have there. The key trick for us is trying to maximize what we have in front of us and create more opportunities, challenge people's imagination, and drive stronger, more consistent customer service.
And you can do that when you have the critical mass of travelers coming through and you want to test new initiatives, you've got to test, test cases right there.
That's true.
Available to you.
And I will say this, there are some very, very smart airports out there. We may be number one in terms of passenger traffic, but we try to take our cues from some of the other innovative things happening in our sphere, such as SFO. They run a great program over there. PDX, Portland, they run a great program. And so do some of the New York airports. They've got a lot of innovation, and we try to make sure that we stay in touch with what they're doing and try to incorporate what other innovations that they're working on to make our airport better. So, but Hartsfield-Jackson is very, very challenging. We have 4,400 square acres of territory to deal with.
Wow.
And that makes us basically a postage stamp compared to some of these other airports.
Like Denver and...
I think you can fit about 10 of us inside of DFW alone. So it's our square mileage is pretty compact. And that's why we're very lucky to have our parallel terminals and minimal space between each one. So that really helps us drive the efficiency that we're known for.
So let's take a step back at... Establish you're working with one of the busiest airports in the world. You know, let's take a look at the sum of your experience throughout the years since we met. You know, just talk about your career, what's brought you to this point, and how did the sum of those experiences kind of like help you kind of like navigate and manage a program like Atlanta's?
Well, I'm fond of saying that I've never met a job I couldn't keep or couldn't leave. I started on the concession side with HMS Host years ago and then worked on the airport side at Chicago O'Hare and very briefly at SeaTac International Airport. But I think I got the most out of my career in trying to apply that knowledge as a consultant. And I was one of the few consulting outfits at the time that was not working for an airport, but instead was working for concessionaires, trying to drive opportunities, trying to get concessionaires either to secure capital or to develop cogent and relevant business plans to be able to take advantage of airport opportunities. And as such, I helped write RFPs. I helped advise concessionaires on how to best optimize their assortment and their product line, and even more important, how to innovate. I was very lucky to be able to work with some of the companies that really didn't have a lot of airport exposure. I was the guy that was helping the aspiring concessionaire who might have had the best new idea, the best mousetrap, but was still working with it in his garage. And so I would help him secure financing and find the right theater in which to introduce their products. So it's been very rewarding being able to help people because that only expanded my own expertise.
Yeah, perfect. So let's just look externally for a second beyond our little industry. You know, what is or will or maybe even could affect this industry of ours?
Clearly, there's a lot of focus and a lot of, I'm going to call it fear, because there is some fear of the changes that technology imposes on our industry.
Yeah.
You can go to one extreme and say, well, will airports one day be replaced by flying cars in general, and will become some sort of like a scene out of Star Wars,
sure,
the planet Coruscant with all these vehicles, you know, zooming through the sky. I mean, would you really need an airport at that time? I think that's one of the things that makes us a little nervous looking way, way down the road. But it's even more simple than that. The internet and the connectivity of the passengers amongst each other, and also the ability for companies to be able to reach passengers, ascertain what their needs and wants are, and try to serve and address those needs and wants, is really what kind of drives a lot of the innovation now that's happening in airports. When you see companies like Grab and you see other companies out there able to reach the passenger in a digital format,
sure,
and basically place orders, fulfill orders, and address needs digitally, mm-hmm, as opposed to having to rely on human interaction, direct human interaction, that's something that is continuing to shape our industry. And the companies that are having a lot of success are the ones who are able to embrace that technology.
No, perfect. So I know you got to get out of here because we're up against a panel that you're going to be moderating.
Sure.
So just emerging food and retail service trends. You've always been one because, again, your background... consulting and working for various operators, you've had basically a 360-degree view of everything, this whole process. But what are some emerging food, retail, and service trends that have not yet hurt industry that you're on the lookout for?
I think as we look in the next 5 to 10 years, More and more companies are trying to find ways to bring to the passenger the concept of affordable luxury.
Sure.
And yeah. We had some false starts, I think, over the last 20 years by trying to bring actual luxury into the terminals in a way that may not have been fully appropriate. But now we want to try to bring the sensation that that passenger, for whatever moment that they're interacting with a concessionaire, that passenger needs to feel like they are the most important person in the world.
Sure.
And that means coming up with tailored solutions that somehow anticipate what the passenger is looking for and deliver. You have to be able to deliver in a way that the passenger can relate to. But passengers really want to feel like they are important, like they're being addressed, mm-hmm. and a lot less like they're just cattle moving through a stockyard.
And so
in a way, it's the customized features that really make things go for passengers today.
Perfect. And do you normally look outside? I remember we spoke a long time ago, and I don't know if you were going to Changi or maybe
sure.
somewhere abroad, and you said, you know, I'd really like to get a movie theater.
You know,
I'd really like to do something like that.
My favorite thing to try to do, I always thought that Mongolian barbecue would just be the answer, because that talks about customization, you talk about freshness. Those things are all there for some reason in Mongolian barbecue. So when I look at innovation, a lot of times I'll go back up to Mongolian barbecue and say, how does this concept that I'm looking at evoke the same level of satisfaction that comes from Mongolian barbecue? Can I customize it? Can I come up with something that's a unique flavor for that one particular customer, that one particular passenger? How can we make it work? So, I mean, yeah, I love looking at things outside. I mean, it makes things go. And trying to either boil it down to its essence and insert it into the airport,
sure.
or maybe even change it, make it work for what we do. But airports are so unique, it's very difficult to take things directly from the street, but yet it's from the street where we can, you know, find out what works for people. So that's a good question, actually.
Mongolian barbecue. that could be the episode of the title for this episode. You know, like Paul Brown, ATL, Mongolian barbecue. And you're like, what? I don't get it.
I tell you.
It's one of those. No, I totally get it. I mean, I think, like you, I'm always looking like, hey, how can we adopt that and bring it here? Not necessarily from one airport to the next, but I mean, this industry of ours like changes so rapidly.
It really does.
You got to think that after a while, when we're moving around so rapidly, the user base is evolving rapidly, that eventually we're just going to have to keep throwing stuff in there to kind of keep up with it.
Well, right? I'll tell you one more thing on this topic. My wife and I, we sit around and spitball all the time about what the next big thing is going to be in airports. And I'm really fascinated right now with this notion of the cashless society.
Yes.
No cash.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to somehow get the passenger to be able to be comfortable with the notion of not having cash or not using cash in the airport, there's a lot of costs that would go away.
Yeah, certainly.
But the question is, would it be better? And I still don't know the answer to that. I mean, I don't want to create an elitist environment where airports almost become inaccessible to the common man or woman. But at the same time, it's hard to ignore the benefits of having less stuff to carry around.
No. I mean, I moderated a panel of the executives for the large primes, and one noted that cash is trash.
Yeah.
You know, because it would cut back on all those costs. And
sure.
Employee handling fees, things like that, I'm sure.
Car service, I mean, you know, you wouldn't need that anymore.
I don't carry cash with me. I mean, honestly, when prompted, it's like my wife and I look at each other like, you? Me? No. You know, and it's usually her. She has it. So.
This is the truth. Now, folks, look into your podcast here. I have six $1 bills in my wallet, and these are the same six $1 bills I've had all week. It's just how it is. I mean, you know, cash is just not as relevant as it used to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, contactless payment, whatever it is, or even just plastic.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
No, definitely. So my last question for you, Paul, is I think this is something that you and I talked about on the side. In terms of the playing field, there's been a lot of consolidation, acquisition, et cetera, over the years. Very recently, actually, with Parity's and HBF. And I'm sure it's actually the most recent one being, you know, Stellar acquiring Pacific Gateway Concessions.
Sure.
So I'm not going to really focus on that, but I'm looking at the next crop that will backfill. specifically ACDBEs.
Yes.
You know, what happens when they graduate from the program, or are they even prepared to graduate?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the ACDBE program, if you look at it in the context of the history of the world, the ACDBE program is still very, very young. And a lot of the companies that began as ACDBEs are now facing the reality of growing so big that they can no longer participate in the ACDB program as a benefactor. They have to be now a sponsor of the program, and they have to bring on other ACDBEs. But some of these companies are not big enough yet to be able to claim the role of a large prime. So,
sure.
So how do you address that? I mean, they still have to be nimble. They still have to retain the ability to amass capital,
yep,
and to make investments in technology to preserve their uniqueness. And I think that's a tough challenge. I think when the program was devised years ago, and thank God I work in Atlanta, because yeah, I have the legacy of Maynard Holbrook Jackson to live up to. But when it was devised, I'm not sure if people really thought about what was going to happen on the other end.
Yeah,
certainly. It was so difficult just to start the program. But now we have to look at those realities. There are a lot of companies now that are getting bigger, but they're still not big enough to compete head to head with the large legacy concessionaires. So,
well, the gap is widening. So
yes,
if you let's just look at the retail side,
yes,
as an example. So you there's been a lot of acquisition. So your middle is gone,
yes,
because those are the ones that are primed for acquisition, really. So you have basically a glut, if I may say, of smaller local, regional, whatever operators, and that are tied to ACDB contracts. They can't be, I'm sure, readily just acquired. Correct.
Well, and I think this is a question that probably should be addressed in an MBA school somewhere, but you've got to have the ability to invest in research and technology to preserve your unique value proposition. As companies get bigger, their capital exceeds our imagination at this particular point. But the companies that graduate from the ACDB program have to be able to find a way to make that investment and to stay different, stay unique, and challenge the industry to do something different. It's the differences, it's the uniqueness that's going to drive their success, I think, in the long term, even when they don't have the economies of scale,
sure,
that some of the larger companies have. And that's where, you know, it's that nimbleness, that ability to think and move faster, that's going to allow them to survive. I certainly hope so, at least.
I mean, well, what's your prediction on that? I'm not going to hold you to it, obviously.
Sure, sure. I think everything kind of goes in waves. Right now we're seeing a wave of acquisitions. Eventually that's going to calm down because the capital that's chasing these acquisitions will begin to get smarter. And then people are going to realize that you can't just get big for bigness' sake. You have to find a way to be a better company,
sure,
than your competition, because that's what's going to lead to winning contracts, winning RFPs. And I think also there's eventually going to be some pressure to find not necessarily shorter lease terms, but longer lease terms.
Yeah.
That's going to allow for more investment, more unique value propositions, and finally a broader service platform in which to satisfy customer needs.
Oh, perfect. Well, truly can't solve all the world's problems on this one podcast.
Well, not on this podcast.
Yeah, at least it's a start.
Not yet.
It gets the conversation going, but I appreciate it. So, Paul, I know you got to run, but thank you for sitting in.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts. Thank you.